Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Another night on Spiritual Connections Radio with your host, Mark Rawson. And I'm really excited to tell you about a lot of the changes that we have coming up on Spiritual Connections Radio over the next couple months. We have a number of people who are already running their radio shows. Pam is one of them, my co-host. And a number of other people. Hello, Pam. Are actually running their own shows, and we're actually going to be launching another 7 shows over the next 2 months. So we're really excited about the different types of programming and everything that's going to be coming up. As always, if you want to find out about the guests we're going to have on our show or some of the other radio shows that are going to be starting up under the Spiritual Connections Radio, you can go to our website, which is www.spiritualconnectionsradio.com. And with that, I'm going to go ahead and hand the show over to my co-host, Pamela. Pamela, are you out there?
I sure am, waiting for you. How is everyone tonight?
I am doing great.
Good. Tonight, everyone, all our listeners, I hope you're doing well. Tonight we have a very special guest. Her name is Jane Hollister. She is a Florida licensed marriage and family therapist and mental health counselor with a private practice in Tampa, Florida. She's also our neighbor, because that's where Mark and I are at the moment. So Jane is going to talk to us tonight primarily about a specialty of hers, of anagrams. Now, anagrams are something that I'm particularly fascinated with, and I'm going to let Jane do the honors of explaining. Jane, are you there?
I am here.
Well, welcome. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm honored to be here.
Thank you so much for coming. Listen, I want to start with explaining to our audience what an anagram is.
Well, first of all, let me tell you how I first got interested in the Enneagram.
Okay.
I was attending Nine Gates Mystery School back in 1989, and this was a month-long, very transformational group that I was in, and on the very last day in the morning, we had a teacher who came to teach us about the Enneagram, and basically, it was the Enneagram of personality types. There being 9 different types, and this teacher gave us the descriptions and gave us a little handout, and we were supposed to read about these different types and then decide what our type was. And I found myself being extremely threatened and defensive because I didn't like feeling that I was being put in a box. I felt like these were descriptions that were somewhat critical and negative, and I was quite threatened by it. And through the course of
yes, that's interesting.
Yes. So through the course of the day, most people had figured out their type. I couldn't figure out my type. Of course, part of the problem was I was so defensive, I couldn't really think. So when I came home, I kind of put that those mimeographed sheets aside and didn't think about it. And finally, I realized that there was one book that had been written on the Enneagram. So I went to Borders and I tried to buy it, and they didn't have it. Barnes & Noble didn't have it. And I finally found one copy in a Catholic bookstore here in Tampa, and I read the book, and I became even more threatened by it. So I kept putting it aside, but I would keep going back to it. And then I was having some difficulty with an employee of mine, and I couldn't quite understand what was going on, and I thought, I wonder if this has anything to do with our Enneagram types. So what I did was I saw that the author had his phone number in the back of the book, so I just called him up, and he was in New York. This was Don Rizzo, who had written the book Personality Types. And I called him up and I said, you know, I'm going to be in New York. Is there any way I could meet with you? Because I've read your book. I'm very threatened by it. I don't know whether I want to get into this Enneagram typology or not. But anyway, it's bothering me enough that I think I want to explore it. So I met him in New York and I was very, very charmed by him. He was just a wonderful person. And he was having a training the next month up in Pennsylvania, and so I went. And from there on out, I was hooked because I began to realize that it wasn't negative at all, and they weren't putting people in boxes. If anything, they were really showing people how to get out of the box, how to get out of the box of the tyranny of our false self. So that said, I can answer your question about what the Enneagram is.
Okay.
There are nine personality types, and I want to list them for you. And they go by numbers. They have some descriptive names, but they go by numbers. And we have all of the types within us, but it's like going into a room where there are nine different windows, and you can go and look out all of the different windows, but we have one window that's our favorite. We have one window that we spend most of the time looking out of, and that would be our type.
Mm-hmm.
So the number one is the reformer. These are
people
that are...
I'm sorry, I didn't hear it. Say it again.
The number,
what was number one?
Mm-hmm, is called the reformer.
Reformer. Thank you.
Reformer. Mm-hmm.
The internet broke up a little bit and I didn't hear it. So okay. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Did you get it?
Mm-hmm.
I got it. The reformer. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now these people are very principled and purposeful. They're self-controlled and pretty perfectionistic. They really love rules. They are people. They're called the good girls and good boys of the Enneagram. They are very rule bound. A lot of times, always want to be on time. They want to follow the rules, and they can be people who are very interested in changing the world. In other words, they want to make the world a better place. The helper is the number two. And they're very generous and demonstrative. They're people-pleasing and possessive. I'm a number two, and so I'm in the right profession because I love helping people. I love helping people to heal. And helpers are people that are very focused on outside of themselves. One of the things that helpers have to learn to do is to turn more inward and take better care of themselves. Threes are called the achiever. They're highly adaptable. They excel in performance. They're very driven and image conscious, and a lot of times they like to be in positions where they're leaders, and so they might be CEOs, people that are working in business. So they can also, a lot of threes are actors and actresses.
Mm-hmm.
Fours are the individualists. They're very expressive, they're dramatic, very self-absorbed and temperamental. A lot of times very deep. They are forever kind of looking within and trying to identify who they are, a lot of times feeling very empty. A lot of times they are novelists and artists, musicians. The five is the investigator. They are very perceptive, innovative, but they can be secretive and isolated. And a lot of times they're the nerds, the people who love technology, or they're the people like Stephen King who write the mystery stories that are somewhat violent. Very interesting people. They can be somewhat withdrawn and secretive, but people who make a great Bill Gates, for instance, is a five, and so they make a great contribution to the world. The six is the loyalist. They're very engaging and responsible, but they can be anxious and suspicious, and they're people who really kind of hold a lot of groups together because they are so loyal. So they're the backbone of a lot of institutions and groups. They make good nurses, teachers. A lot of times people who are firemen and people that go out and help people a lot in a different way than the two.
Mm-hmm.
Then the seven is the enthusiast. They're spontaneous and versatile, very inquisitive, but they can be somewhat scattered because they're always planning and they're thinking about the future. They love to play, and they're usually very funny. If you're going to have a party, it's always great to have a seven available to be there because they can be the life of the party. The eight is the challenger, and they're very self-confident, decisive, but they can be willful and very confrontational. And a lot of times they're the leaders. They love to be in control. The nine is the peacemaker. They're very receptive, reassuring, agreeable, but they can be quite complacent and withdrawn at times. But they're people who are usually very easygoing. A lot of our presidents are nines. Reagan was a nine. I think Obama is a nine. They're people who really like to compromise. They don't like a lot of conflict. So it's kind of peace at any price sometimes. So those are the core basic nine types, and we have all of those types within us. But we'll have one that, like I said before, will be our primary type.
Hey, Jane?
Yeah?
You know, one of the questions I was thinking about as you were mentioning those is that, you know, you hear so much about a generation having, and I know this is kind of outside the scope of what you're talking about, but, you know, you hear a generation of being a certain type. I guess, you know, if you wanted to go back a few years, you could talk about the Aquarian generation or something like that. You know, I don't know what they're called these days, the techie generation or something like that. You know,
mm-hmm.
It seems like every 10 years there's a branding of a generation of people out there, you know, mostly students, I guess. And I guess I was wondering, do you find that you'll see that if you talked about a certain, trying to think of what the word would be, if you were thinking about like a certain type of branding or idea of a certain generation, do you find that they fall into certain numbers, or do you find that, you know, a whole group of people who might have a certain standard will have mixed numbers, and it doesn't matter what generation they are?
I don't know that I can answer that. I think, like they say, one of the things is that there are more sixes and nines than any other type. Why that is, I don't know, but that's what they say, that there are more nines than sixes. I don't think it has anything to do with generations, though right now in this particular generation, I would say that the number five, the investigator, the Bill Gates kind of generation of this technology is very, very prevalent. So that's an interesting question, Mark, and it might be worth exploring. I don't know that I can answer it any more than right now. I would say that a lot of the kids and a lot of what we're doing with our technology, our phones, our internet, they're head types, and there are three categories. These types all fall into three different categories. There are head types, there are heart types, and then there are gut types. The head types are the fives, the sixes, and the sevens, the investigator, the loyalist, and the enthusiast. These are people that pretty much live in their head. The two, three, and four are the heart types, and the eight, nine, and one are gut types. And I want to talk about that a little bit because one of the questions that you asked me is, what is the, how did you put it? You said, what is the core of this work? And I would say that the core of this work has to do with the fact that we're three-brained beings. We have three intelligences. We have a physical intelligence, we have a mental intelligence, and we have an emotional intelligence. We're hearing a lot about these different intelligences now. Different books have been written about these different intelligences. But the gut or the physical intelligence has to do with the tensions and boundaries that we begin to set up for ourselves. Like, for instance, gut people, the eight, nines, and ones, these are people that just don't want to be messed with, and they have different ways of dealing with that. One of the stories that I tell is that when eight people come into the world, they look around and see the world is like a jungle. It's kind of eat or be eaten, and they decide that they are going to be the king of the jungle. They are not going to be eaten. They are going to be in control. When the nine comes in, they look around. This is the peacemaker. They look around, and they're not sure they want to even be in the game. So they kind of are in and out. They're looking at the world, and they don't know whether or not they want to play or not. So a lot of times nines can look like and act like they're very present, but in the meantime, they're going fishing in their minds. They're kind of checked out. And the ones, which are the third category of the gut type, look around at the world and they say, my goodness, what a terrible mess this is. I've got to clean it up. I've got to do something about making it better. And so they're the reformers. They get moving, and they're the Al Gores and the people in the world who want to make huge changes. So then what begins to happen when we have these tensions and boundaries in our physical intelligence, what happens is that when we're little and we're corrected or we're reprimanded or we're punished or we're humiliated, we have an emotional reaction to that. And so we make some decisions about ourselves that sometimes are very negative. It's like I'm not lovable, or I've got to really be perfect, or I've got to perform, or they don't want me here. We make some decisions about ourselves in the heart center and begin to feel that we have to create a false identity so that we begin to act as if we're loving, or we act certain ways to be able to get the attention and the love that every child really wants. Or we can do the opposite and become rebels and act out and get attention that way. But we have these emotional reactions in our heart center, or in this emotional intelligence, that part of the brain. And then what we do is we move to the head center, which is the intellectual intelligence, and we begin, because we have certain fears and anxieties about what is happening to us, we begin to develop strategies or stories to begin to deal with this false personality, and then it just becomes a vicious kind of circle because the fears create more tensions, which then create our being even more feeling like we have to create this false identity, and we lose the ground of our being. We lose our essence because we've lost that physical intelligence of really being able to see reality. In other words, we start imagining our lives rather than really being connected to what is really going on. In other words, we lose presence. And, of course, we're hearing a lot about presence now in our spiritual work about Eckhart Tolle talks a lot about the power of now and the importance of being present. But these tensions prevent us from being present. Does that make sense?
Yes,
it does.
Yeah.
So Jane, answer a question for me. How do you determine what number you are?
Well, you can take a test, or you can read the descriptions in the different books. There are a number of different books.
Mm-hmm.
The test is called a Riso-Hudson test, and you can take that test online if you go to the website of the Enneagram Institute. You can take that test. There's 144 questions. That's the long test. There's a short test that can give you I don't advise the short test because it's not that accurate. I say if you really want to figure out your type, then take the long test. It costs, I think, $10. And then what you do is you have to read because it took me about a year to discover my type. Of course, I was very resistant, and I didn't have a good sense of really who I was inside. I knew who I was outside, but I didn't have a good sense of my inner life because I was so focused on what's out there. And that is one of the characteristics of twos or my type, is that I focused more on people outside of me than I did on myself.
Right.
So it took me a while to really figure out what my type was.
Okay. So after you figure out what your type is, what does that information really give you?
Well, then you begin, that's an excellent question. So now I know that I'm, say for instance, a 2. If I'm a 2, then I begin to learn that my energy goes outward, that I move towards people, and that one of the things that if I am going to really develop myself spiritually, I have to pull that energy back and be more focused on myself. One of the things that goes along with these three intelligences has to do with in our instincts, in the instinctive center or the gut center, which has to do with this physical intelligence, it has to do with learning to relax, and it has to do with our self-preservation, learning to take maybe better physical care of ourselves. In other words, we may need to change our diet. We may need to modify some of our what we're drinking or smoking or taking better physical care of ourselves. So there's this physical emphasis on learning how to take care of the body and relax and not be so defensive. So learning to meditate would be one of the things that would help you with that. And then in terms of the emotional intelligence, you would begin to see how you might be more reactive, how some of the stories I'm telling myself interfere with my being able to grow or to be more loving or to be more open. We all have our stories about ourselves, and we talk to ourselves pretty incessantly, at least most people do. So how to stop, and it's as simple as that, how to stop the compulsive thinking or feeling that we do in the emotional center and in what we think is our thinking center, which would be the intellectual intelligence, the higher cortex. Actually, if you stop and think about it, when we're in balance, when all three of these intelligences or all three of these centers are in balance, we then can cultivate or begin to cultivate our spiritual intelligence, which really has to do with the higher mind. It has to do with our ability then to listen to our inner guidance and our inner wisdom. Most of the time, we're listening to old programs or we're listening to old tapes, and that's where our anxiety and depression and fear continues to be rehashed over and over and over again.
Isn't that funny? You know, we have this voice in our head that keeps talking to us and giving us the worst advice possible, and we keep listening because we think it's us that's telling us that.
Right. That's right. You know, Gurdjieff, who really was the person who started the work with the Enneagram, not the Enneagram of personality types, but he worked a lot with the different centers, tells a very, very fascinating story that goes something like this. There is this, and of course this is a story that took place a long, 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 long time ago, back in the days when they were still driving horses and carriages. And so there was this driver who had a horse and carriage, and he was a drunkard. He really loved to booze it up, and so he's in this saloon and getting schnockered and has his horse tied to the hitching post out in front of the saloon. And the carriage was hooked up to the horse. And the poor horse was hungry. It needed to be shod. It needed to be brushed and curried, and it hadn't been taken care of in a long time. And the carriage was in terrible disarray. The fringe around the top was all worn, and there were holes in the top. The upholstery was all worn and holey. And so what has to happen is that the driver has to sober up. He has to wake up. He has to get sober, and he has to come out, and he has to take care of his horse, and he has to take care of the carriage. And when he's sober and his horse is taken care of and the carriage is taken care of, then he can be in the driver's seat and the master can come. In other words, there's a place for the master to come and be in the carriage. So I love that story because it really talks about the three intelligences and how the horse is our emotions, the carriage is our body, and the driver is our mind. And those three have to be lined up before we can have the master or our inner wisdom or inner guidance come to us and then tell us where to go.
Fascinating. Is that the core of it, Jane? Is that
what?
The basic core? Is that the core of the Enneagram, the balance?
It really is. I think that is the core of the Enneagram. And all of the types then have a different way of looking at the world. You know, we have different temperaments. You can see little children. They're very different. Even little animals have personalities, not as specific as human beings, but they're different. We have a different temperament. And we don't know that we're born with our type, though I think some of us think that we are. But we're born into a certain center, for sure, where we have a primary center that we will be more, our intelligence will be more acute in one center than the other. In other words, some of us seem to be more head types, some of us are more heart types, some of us head, heart, and gut. Yeah.
Right. Well, that's fascinating.
Hey, Jane.
We need to take a little break here. Mark,
yeah.
Do you want to jump in?
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and jump in. So you've been listening to Spiritual Connections Radio, and you can find out more about us on the internet at www.spiritualconnectionsradio.com. And with that, Jane, can you tell people where they can go to your website to find out more about the work that you do?
www.janehollister.com.
And how do you spell the last name?
Hollister.
Excellent. Thank you. So before we continue with that, you know, I guess one of the questions I have for you is, because I know from doing the exam or the test that I'm a number two.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess, because we're going to talk about spiritual work in a minute, and I guess we'll kind of do this backwards. So can you explain to people what spiritual work is? Because we know we talk about people kind of personally working on things in their lives and stuff like that. Because I'm going to actually back that into a question about the whole Enneagram.
Okay.
So what is personal work?
Well, personal spiritual work, I think there's personal work where you're having to work on maybe family of origin issues, trauma. It's hard to do our personal work and short circuit kind of doing some of the healing work that has to be done with trauma or depression or anxiety. But basically, what I would say spiritual work is, you know, years ago, I happened to run across a book, and I'd really like to read this to you because it caught my eye and made a huge difference. It's rare that I would read just a paragraph that would make such a difference in my life, but this paragraph really made a huge difference in my life. And this is from a book by Maurice Nicole, his Psychological Commentaries. And he says here, and I quote, "When a man begins to observe himself from the angle that he is not one but many, he begins to work on his being rather than," and I add here, "rather than his doing. He begins to work on his being. He cannot do this if he remains under the conviction that he is one, for then he will not be able to separate himself from himself." In other words, he's trapped in his false personality. "For he will take everything in him, every thought, mood, feeling, impulse, desire, emotion, and so on, as himself, that is, as capital I. But if he begins to observe himself, he will then at that moment become two, an observing side and an observed side. To me, this is the beginning of spiritual work, when you begin to observe yourself. This is not easy because we don't always like what we see."
So where I was going with this question is, you know, I know from what I've learned so far that I'm a two. And I guess the question I would have for you is it possible for me to do so much personal / and or spiritual work that I will actually become a seven or a four or another number?
No.
No, so, I'll always become a two.
You'll just become a healthier two.
So it's not that this could be compared to archetypes, but it's almost like the idea that within each of the numbers there can be a, you know, a one side of it versus the other side of it for the number. And I think I learned that from reading some of the book and saying, okay, well, if you're a two, if you're not working on some stuff, then you're going to do some pretty extreme things. But if you work on yourself, then you become a healthy two, and then you become more nurturing. So it's a nurturing versus a needing kind of thing. I don't know if that's a good summary.
Well, that's not a bad summary. The thing about the two is that they have to learn to turn more inward. In other words, it's interesting that both of us are twos and both of us are very involved in doing spiritual work at this point in our lives. I don't know about you, there was a point in my life when I didn't even know I had an inner life. I was really turned away from spirituality and God, because actually when I was a teenager, I became an atheist, and I didn't believe in God, or I thought I didn't believe in God. But I kind of believed I was God. I was going to help people. I was going to heal people. I was going to do all these wonderful things for people. In other words, I thought I was a very loving, caring person. And it's not that I wasn't a loving, caring person, but I didn't love and care for myself.
Interesting.
Thank you. Yeah. So I guess the next thing I want to – well, first of all, did we cover talking about the three types? We were talking about the heart, you know, how,
yes,
you know, we had those three categories. Did we cover those?
Yes.
Well, I think we did. I think as well as those three centers, they're also called centers. The head center. And what we have to do is, when we're out of balance, all right, now this is interesting. The more, if we're in our false personality, that we are usually operating out of two of those centers. We're either operating out of our heart and our head, and we're out of touch with our body, or we're in our bodies and hearts and out of touch with our head. In other words, there are different combinations of that the types have for being out of balance. It's all about being out of balance. When we're in balance, we're tracking on all three of those intelligences. And the main thing is that we are connected with what is, with reality, with being present, being able to breathe and feel the sensations in our body. A lot of people don't even feel their feet in their shoes. They're living in their heads, or they're just emoting. They're living in their emotions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think that's why it was very interesting from the quote you gave earlier about Eckhart Tolle and the teachings of the power of now.
Right.
And that is really just being present. I mean, I think we realize, and I know you probably see this from just working in the field as a counselor in different aspects and all the different aspects in the way that you sit down and work with people and couples and stuff like that and families, is that so much of our energy is spent on dealing with things that have already happened in the past or might happen in the future instead
That's
of just
right.
being present. You know, I had a very interesting run, and I've been kind of traveling around the country and doing these expos, these spiritual expos where I run a booth, and I've had a chance to do that for Deborah King. And, you know, as part of that process, I get a chance to meet a lot of different people. And I had a gentleman sit down with me, and it's really funny because I swear to you, he looked like Walter Cronkite. And he just comes down, he sits down next to me, he starts talking, and, you know, for a spiritual aspect, it's almost like he started to channel. And that was, he was starting to give a lot of guidance and everything that was coming through. And, you know, as he's sitting there, and he just all of a sudden just, you know, he introduces himself and he had a press badge on and he was telling me how he goes around and talks to everybody and stuff like that. Very interesting gentleman. And as I'm talking to him, you know, he turns to me and he goes, you know, so many people are trying to do so many things in life where the only thing you really need to do is you just need to be. You know, people talk about being spiritual or being healthy. He says, all you have to do is be. You don't have to be something. You know, you just have to be. You have to, and it goes to that whole idea of being present. And I think that was just something I was thinking of as you made that comment there. Now,
well, one of the things that we say in the Enneagram is that we are too much human doings rather than human beings. And of course our culture totally supports our human doing rather than our human being. But there's quite a movement, I think, afoot for us to get more grounded in our bodies. One of the ways that we put it, if we're not grounded in our body, our true heart can't be open. We can act loving, but we really don't feel loving. We can smile, but the smile is coming just from our face, not from our heart. And then the true nature of the mind is to be quiet. Most people think, you know, we spend lots of money going to lots of workshops and different things to kind of improve our personalities, improve our egos, rather than to learn to just be. So, yes, you're absolutely right.
Now, I know also from the book, I think I remember hearing something about how as a two, I can have what's called a wing into another number. Can you explain that to people and what that means?
Well, the thing that's hard to do over the radio, but let me see if I can do it. The Enneagram is also a symbol. It's a circle that has a triangle in it and a hexagon over that triangle so that there are nine different points. Enneagram means nine points. So at the top, at the very top of the apex of the triangle is the nine. Then the eight is to the left of it, and the one is to the right of it. And next to the one is that is the gut center. Then next to the one is the two, and next to the two is the three. So if you are a two, you either veer towards the one or towards the three, unless you're just right in the center where you've got both of those numbers on either side of you, and we call those the wings. So as I recall you may have been a two with a one wing. Do you remember?
No, I don't. I know I have it written down in the book at home. And
but when you take the test, what you'll find is you'll have a certain score in all of the numbers. So you might have a 27 on the 2, and then you might have 19 on the 1 and 13 on the 3. And if that's the case, then you're a 2 with a 1 wing.
Mm.
Does that make sense?
Yes, yes, it does. It's almost kind of like saying, well, you know, I'm a 2, but I have a tendency to have some of the characteristics of this other number, and it just happens to be
one.
That the one,
yes.
the one on this
That's
side
right.
is just is closer
That's
to
right.
Y.
It's going
to
color. It's going to color it. Well, actually, the 2 with the 1 wing is called the servant, and the 2 with the 3 wing is called the host or the hostess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was just really amazing to see that, and you know, and to really understand myself. And it's funny, I can kind of tell people who are listening to the show that I've kind of gone through this experience where I've taken the test and I've looked at the numbers and I've gone back and read the book. And you know, my personal experience of it is that when you read the twos, it's like, oh my goodness, they wrote this book about me. You know, this one
right.
chapter on twos. I mean, this is me. And hey, then you're looking at it, and you know, then it gets a little hard because then you're looking at it and going, "Oh boy, those are the characteristics of me that aren't so good," and you know, and those are some stuff that I got to go work on or I need to go look at. And you know, I don't know if you agree with me on this, and I'll kind of put this out to both Pam and Jane, or yourself there, Jane, and that is, you know, one of my personal philosophies that I think I've been coming to lately is that. Sometimes awareness is all you need, and it's not that you need to go fix something, but sometimes you just need to be aware of it so that when you go into a situation where you notice that all of a sudden something is coming up that you would probably think of as, well, I'm going to go work on that as either personal work or spiritual work. You know, there's this idea, I think there's a philosophy out there that's kind of like, oh, we got to go find all the problems that we have and just basically fix them all. And I'm kind of the mindset, and I think one of the hardest things I find in a lot of those situations is sometimes you can't find the tools that you need to work on something in a certain area. But I think my general philosophy has been sometimes it's enough just to recognize that you're doing it so that you kind of catch yourself in the act and maybe put yourself in front of something instead of, let's say, normally maybe that that output or something that could happen in that situation would be you kind of yelling at somebody or not being so nice, and if you can kind of catch yourself in it. I'll start with you, Jane. Do you feel that in some situations it's enough just to recognize versus the fact you got to fix everything?
Well, I think that's the whole point. It is catching ourselves in the act. And the thing that I love about the Enneagram and respect so much about it is that it is a tool. It isn't, you know... It isn't a religion. It isn't even a philosophy. It's a tool, and it's a tool to be used to do just that, to become more aware, to wake up, to be more present.
Thank you.
Of course, you can go as deeply into it as you want to, and it is a very complex system, but it's also very simple, but the bare bones of it is awareness. It is waking up. It is catching yourself in the act. And realizing that we aren't our personality. You see, we get very enamored with our stories and our personality, thinking that that is who, well, I'm a loving, helping person. Well, yes, I am a loving, helping person, but that isn't who I am. You know, it's like I'm essence, I'm being, I'm silence, I'm just here. And this is what connects us all. It, in other words, we're all connected. It doesn't matter whether we're male or female or black or white or gay or straight. In other words, we're all connected, we're all one, and the more aware and conscious we are, then the more we can get into social engineering in our culture so that it will be a more spiritual world, so that it will be a better world, so that it will be a healthier world.
Thank you for that. Pam, what is your take on the same question about, you know, do you think it's enough with personal or spiritual work just to recognize what's going on, or do you think you have to go and fix everything?
Well, I think in an ideal world, we could easily say all you have to do is keep your attention off of all of that personality and it no longer exists. And you recreate yourself and just go from there because you're not a sum of everything that's happened to you. However, we don't live in a perfect world. And the way that it usually goes is that we're aware for periods of time, mostly short periods of time, and then we slump somehow back into the, how Jane calls it, the false personality or the false identity, where you start believing the story. You start believing who it is that you've always told yourself you are.
Or that somebody else has told you you were.
Exactly. Or that someone else has told you you were and you believed it, which often happens as a child. So you end up in a situation where you're in this dichotomy. Well, do I have to go back and relive everything that I've experienced and get rid of all those beliefs in order to be healthy? No, I don't think so. But I also don't think it's possible for most of us to just take on this sudden ascension or enlightenment where that no longer affects us as well. So it is a process of balance. And I love the way Jane put it because, and correct me if I'm wrong, Jane, what it is that this process does is you take a test, you discover your number, and with that number you can determine your physical, mental, and emotional balance, where you are in your head, heart, or gut, where you are in your physical, mental, emotional, and come up with a system, in as far as awareness goes, to bring you to a point where you can reach this balance and at a point of balance literally reach your higher mind or your inner wisdom. Am I right?
Right. Right.
It's kind of
getting back to that circle with the three intelligences. Depending upon how wounded we are, and some people have been very wounded. I mean, sometimes physically, sometimes emotionally, sometimes mentally. And healing has to take place, and there has to be a safe place sometimes for that healing to take place. I mean, it is rare, though it does happen, that people have spontaneous healings. But a lot of times it takes a lot of work. It takes a lot of patient, long work with a therapist or with a counselor or even on our own, where we're kind of organizing the distortions that we have made of ourselves before we can really have that horse and carriage and driver all lined up for the master to come.
That's a good analogy. I love that. You know, before I go in and hit us with the final question, because we're pretty much almost finished already, it's amazing how quickly an hour goes. Jane, can you tell people how to find out more? Because I'm sure a lot of the listeners are going to be like, you know, where can I go buy that book? You know, how can I get my hands on that exam? How can I go find somebody I can work with to work through this if I want to work with somebody? What's a good resource for that?
A very good resource would be The Wisdom of the Enneagram is one of the latest books by Don Riso and Russ Hudson, and that book usually is available at Barnes & Noble. There are literally, whereas when I first got interested in the Enneagram, there were only two books that were published in the world. There are now hundreds and hundreds of Enneagram books being published all over the world. The Enneagram is being taught internationally, China, even Korea, Japan, Europe, Australia. I mean, so there are many, many books. My teachers, Don Riso and Russ Hudson, give workshops. The thing to do is to go to their website. There's a lot of free information on that site, www.theenneagraminstitute.com. And there are many other, if you just Google the Enneagram, there's just a lot of information. One interesting thing that you can do if you go to theenneagraminstitute.com is they have, once you figure out your number, every day they will send you something about your type and what you need to work on if you're a 5 or if you're a 9 or if you're a 7. It's called the Enneagram Saying of the Day, I believe it is. And if you can sign up for that, it's right on the first page if you go to theenneagraminstitute.com.
Wow. Thank you. Thank you for that. So go ahead and give out your website again.
My website is www.janehollister.com. I'm a licensed mental health counselor. I work with couples. I don't work with families. And I use the Enneagram a lot in my work with couples. There's a very good book that has a little bit about work with couples called Discovering Your Personality Type. There are 45 different combinations of different types and how they relate to one another. There's a lot on the webpage about that, not my webpage, but the Enneagram Institute webpage.
Excellent.
It's an interesting way of working with couples.
All right, so before I hit you with the last question for the day, I'm going to go ahead and just tell everybody you've been listening to Spiritual Connections Radio. We're just kind of wrapping up the show for this evening. I want to thank everybody for being on, and you can find out more about us at www.spiritualconnectionsradio.com. I guess the final question I have for you for the night, Jane, is personal work and spiritual work, is it ever done? It feels like it's an onion that you just peel a layer off of.
I don't think it's ever done because we live in the world, and the world is full of tensions. And so we're just constantly needing to be aware and present out of our reactivity. I don't think it's ever done. I don't think it's supposed to be done. I look at this world as a spiritual school. And so therefore I don't have to feel abused because I have to keep working on myself. I think it's a very wonderful goal to be able to. My teacher Don Riso just recently died last October, and I was not with him when he died, but some of his students and colleagues who were with him said he was working on himself up until the very end, making associations, understanding things better about himself, his personality, and life. So I think it's a never-ending, from birth to death, that we can be curious about the process of life and death and rebirth, and it's an endless kind of circle that we're in.
Wow. And with that, I want to thank you for being on the show, and also you, Pam, for my being there as my co-host. And I want to wish you a great
welcome.
Night and sending lots of love and light to everybody out there.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jane.
life is but a dream.
Spiritual Connections Radio.